no matter where I go to have this baby, when they get my social and my name and my phone number, any medical facility that has internet can pop into my MyChart and say, oh, she uses cannabis.
This is the Cannamom Show, a podcast chronicling the inspiring stories of real women in the emerging cannabis industry. Your host, Joyce Gerber, mom, lawyer, political activist, has been speaking with women from coast to coast and around the world who are leaders in the revolution of cannabis and caregiving. Continuing on her mission to lift up the stories of the women creating the cannabis industry by sharing their canna stories with you. So go make yourself a cup of tea or roll yourself a joint, sit back and learn something new about this magical plant on The Canna Mom Show with Joyce Gerber.
From the Tip O'Neill Studios in North Cambridge, Massachusetts, it's the Canna Mom Show. Now here's your host, Joyce Gerber.
And welcome back to the Canna Mom Show, where all my microphones are working and I think I can hear the show in my head. So we are good. Yay.
All systems go.
But we carried through last week because we are professionals. We've been doing this for five seasons.
I produce and edit the show, Joyce, so the listener might not have noticed any drop off in the quality. So.
I don't think I felt like I was screaming in the beginning, though, but then I felt like I calmed down at the end. Can you?
We still got every word. We still got every word. Right.
Hysterical. All right. Did you watch the Oscars?
I did. Did you enjoy them?
I did. So I know my Jews and cannabis. I talk about Jews and weed a lot. So what did you think of that moment of his name is director Jonathan Glazer. He actually said when he won. So right now we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people, whether you are victims of October 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack in Gaza. So that line, we refute Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked, has become very weirdly controversial. So I have my own take on it, but I don't know if you've heard anything in your world.
I remember hearing that, but I feel like I didn't get the full backstory. So is the guy Jewish and he just decided to renounce his Judaism at that moment?
So that's the way it's being portrayed in some of my Jewish world, but I'm also hearing if commas are important, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. He's using Jewishness in the Holocaust as an excuse for allowing some of what is happening in the Gaza. That's the other interpretation of it.
An argument that more than one have made. I don't happen to agree with it, and I have a feeling you don't either. But
I mean, I don't think you can refute your Jewishness. That's kind of the thing. So I don't know. There's a lot of Jew in the Oscars. There's a lot of Jewish connections this year.
This year? How about every year?
I don't know.
The Jews have been doing just fine. Yeah, and as you've seen the film, Oppenheimer?
Oppenheimer, Jewish. Scientist, Jewish, not only that,
but I thought it was just a kind of a very interesting moment in the film when Oppenheimer says to one of his colleagues, we're behind in this race, but we have one thing going for us, anti-Semitism, because Hitler thought that it was the Jews' science. And so there was kind of a fist pump moment for the Jews saying, yeah, we're smart, and if you don't like our math, then you will pay at your own peril.
I don't know, but we exist. We're here. I don't know. And Barbie, Ruth, what was her name? Ruth Handler, Jewish.
Oh, is that right? Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a Jew in the world. There's not many of us.
I don't think Barbie's Jewish. There's something about her.
I don't thought her. She's definitely a Shiksa. But you know, that's how it is when you came here. We understand. Mm-hmm. Whatever. There's not a lot of us. I hope what he was saying is he was refuting the idea of using it as an excuse. That is my, I don't know. That's what I want to believe. So I hope that's what he said. You can't refute your Jewishness. Just out there, if you're listening, it's not a thing you can do.
Yeah. Right. Because, the argument that I hear what he's saying, it's such a delicate topic, as Joyce. And I know that you've had some sleepless nights over the Israel thing. But that would seem nonsensical to say, if you're making this sort of nuanced argument that let's acknowledge all the strife that Jews have gone through, but let's not use it as a blanket excuse to slaughter people and starve them. Okay, I hear you, right? But to say that now I'm out on the Jew thing? Yeah, I have a feeling he just used the wrong choice of words.
And he was shaking. I did notice he was shaking when he said it. And I don't know. That's a tough subject.
It really is.
I don't like being like, I don't know. It was making me feel uncomfortable. So I'll just put it out there because you know what? I am trying to be part of the Jews and Weed event in Boston. It's coming up.
Right. Very cool.
What were you going to say? Sorry.
No, you know what? It wasn't important. But I will add that I'm glad you enjoyed the meme or GIF that I made for you.
Oh,
which said, Jews and Weed, you can't spell chai without hi. So there you go.
It's making it rounds. It's out there, people. All right. And so Jews and Weed, we exist. We're out there. We met in Vegas, and now we're meeting in Boston. So if you are around on Thursday, March 21st, we will be meeting at Nudea on Lansdowne Street. It's going to be fun. I've invited people who aren't in Weed because I just think it's great to bring my people in. And if you just want to join us, please check it out. Join me. Jews Who Toke is sponsoring it. And yeah, we're out there. We're doing our thing.
All right. L'chaim.
And one last thing. Did you get my video? Did I send it to you yesterday?
Oh, yes. Would you like me to call that up?
So the Hemp Guitar campaign is in full swing. If you don't remember, the Canon Mom Show is giving away a one-of-a-kind hemp guitar that you can smoke out of and you can play, created by Lampkin Guitars. It will be on display at the Goods Dispensary in Somerville, Massachusetts, and we'll be doing a live podcast. And late-breaking news, Dave, Josh might be there to play it.
Oh, wow. Ah! So cool.
But we have
the rocker himself.
And so we do actually have a video, which I think Dave is frantically trying to pull up if he can find it.
give me a sec here.
It's a little long. It looks a little bit like a Saturday Night Live ad just because it does really literally have a bowl in it that you can smoke out of. So, but it's real. We won't play the whole thing. It's a little long.
So, yeah, I have it here, Trish. You want me to play it?
Oh, yeah, play just a little bit. Don't play the whole thing.
So we're seeing images of the guitar, right?
Yeah, right. This is an audio podcast, basically.
Yeah, we need to narrate a little bit here.
There's Josh.
Josh is playing the guitar.
I made sure they put him in it because I'm a Canon Mom. It's all the frets, all the things. I don't know. If you're a guitar enthusiast, you'll like enjoy this.
It looks gorgeous. And it's exciting to hear him play the Canon Mom theme song live.
So anyways, you might... Hey, look, there's a bowl. I think this is the one that looks like Saturday Night Live when it comes up around the bowl. There it is.
Yeah, it does. Well, that's cool.
That's hysterical. Anyways, but that video that he made on Instagram is trending again. We're almost at 1 million views.
Wow. A million? Yikes. Incredible.
People out there, if you want it, go to Lampkin Guitars, enter your name, give me a little cash, just a gift. So we can keep sharing these stories and your name will be entered. You actually don't have to give money because we know that legally as lawyers. But, you know, if you want to support us and we'll keep sharing these stories that are crushing the stigma around cannabis and caregivers, then you could have a one-of-a-kind, really cool, I don't know, collector's item.
It's the ultimate conversation piece.
Music and Weed. All right. Thank you, Dave. And so we have a guest today that she likes music and weed too, but that's not what we're here to talk about. So today's guest, she is an OG Massachusetts cannabis advocate, one of, if not the very first Canna Mom I ever met. With over a dozen years of local cannabis industry experience, she has had influence in many aspects of the growing cannabis industry in Massachusetts, including her work with Elevate Northeast, where she was on a team of cannabis industry leaders and educators and patients who shared a passion for creating educational programs and experiences that break stigma against the cannabis plant and those who consume and work with it, a mission close to our heart. Today, she is here to talk about specific stigma she has experienced and experiencing again as a pregnant woman consuming cannabis, and what she has done and what she's hoping to do advocating for herself and others. Please welcome to the Canna Mom Show, Kara Crabb Burnham. Welcome.
Thank you. So glad to be back, Joyce.
Yeah, I think the first episode, maybe we'll do them side by side. Maybe we'll show what it looked like back in the day.
It was probably so much thinner.
Me too.
I needed less filters.
Yeah, I'm like, nobody gets to be this close to me. Nobody wants to see me up close this time. Okay, so welcome. Actually, it was probably on video because back in the day, the early ones were video.
They were. We were in a studio in Was it
Wellesley.
Wellesley. Wellesley. I'm going to say Newton, but yeah, Wellesley.
That's hysterical.
Yep, I remember.
I'm going to find it. All right. So you have an OG story. It's got a lot of different things, but here today to talk about your pregnancy, what is happening today and what happened before. I don't know how we want to begin, but maybe what happened the first time. I don't know. How do you think this is the best way to share it?
So I guess not a lot of people know this about me, but this is actually my fifth pregnancy. Oh. I have one living child. Yeah. So when I was 15, my late teens, I was diagnosed with a neurological disorder that causes me to have stress-induced tics, convulsions that can develop into seizures. And unlike epilepsy, not to downplay anybody else's seizure disorder, but I'm a little envious of the ones that are like 30, 60 seconds. My longest episode was 4 days. Mm. So I was in perpetual physical movement for 4 days that I was not in control of. And so it was there have been struggles staying pregnant, I guess you could say. Mm. And during my first pregnancy, which was back in 2016, I was at Brigham and Women's, which is a very, very popular birthing labor and delivery hospital in Boston. Very highly regarded. It had an amazing doctor who was totally on my side, who understood. I spent 6 months transitioning off of my anti-seizure drugs onto pregnancy-approved seizure medications. And that was a whole that was a whole other experience. But I managed to get onto Lamictal, which is what they do give for epileptic patients, which I do not have epilepsy. I don't actually, there's not even a name for what I have. It's just a neurological disorder where my nervous system just spazzes out for days on end. I mean, sometimes they're short, and by short, I mean 4 hours. So it could be.
But you're in a situation where you're using cannabis in a way that is so allowing you to function as a human being in the world and moving forward, and now you're pregnant. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So back then, my seizure disorder was a lot more prevalent. I was having many more frequent, heavy, stronger seizures just on a very regular basis. I go through this process with the hospital, and I told them, like, I'm going to have to continue to use cannabis. I'm not willing to give up this medicine that's working for me. If you can't give me an actual scientific, actually scientifically researched study, like that, and several of them that show that there is going to be consequence to this decision. For example, with alcohol use or abuse during pregnancy, you can risk causing a disease called FAS, fetal alcohol syndrome. And that causes long-term developmental issues in infants and adults.
And this, just to clarify, so this is a known
harm. FAS is like a
known harm. And yeah. Alcohol is not part of the tox screen, right?
Not unless you have a history of it. You come in intoxicated, or you're known to, they check the baby. They can look at the baby and they can do a study. They can do a test on the baby and say, okay, this baby has FAS.
But unlike cannabis is part of a different reasoning because we don't know what the danger is. Okay. So you come in, it's 2016. It's early. It's just adult use. It's just been voted on. And they say to you,
we're going to go through this rigmarole. You're going to have to go to the social services counselor here at the hospital. They're going to they made me go through the NICU. They made me go talk to all of these people around the hospital. I explained to them my situation. They were all like, you have no idea what you're doing and you can't do this. This is super dangerous. And I was like, well, I've lost pregnancies because I have seizures. So what's more dangerous? I have proof that not using it's dangerous. So if you can't tell me that cannabis has an equivalent to FAS, then what's the point of all of these conversations?
Exactly.
So in the end, I had a very supportive doctor who gave me the phone number to the legal department of Brigham and Women's ownership which is Partners Healthcare.
Okay.
So I called Partners Healthcare and the head of their legal department in patient discrimination. And I said, this is patient discrimination. I'm a legal card carrying medical marijuana user. I'm buying it through the stores. It's tested. And we we are doing this the right way. I'm consuming as needed. I'm not over consuming. This needs to be an option for me. And if you don't, like if you send DCF into my life, we're going to the news. We're going to the podcasts. We are going to have a strike outside of my home when DCF shows up. We're going to make a scene. We're going to make a scene. And your name is going to be on the front of this for patient discrimination. So this is your choice. Is this what you want to do? Or do you want to make the smart decision and change this policy? And at Brigham and Women, I won. It was like...
So even though partnership, they own other hospitals. So the only hospital where this is true is at the one hospital because of one patient who did something and went to the top. And they said, so nobody at Brigham is tested anymore? Is that how it works?
Nobody's tested at Brigham and Women anymore. And nobody has filed a 51A. I mean, they may be tested and the doctor says, hey, we have recommendations about this. But these are the recommendations. And then we all move on.
But there are no social services, no people knocking your door, nobody checking on you, nobody telling you you're a bad mom.
They do not file the 51A for moms who use cannabis during pregnancy.
Okay, so that's one hospital.
Legal or medical. Adult use or medical. They don't do it because there's no equivalent. There's no science behind this decision.
Right.
And if you show up and you have other drugs in your system or you have a history of using drugs, they'll check for it. I mean, if you're fresh out of rehab and they're going to check to make sure there's not cocaine or meth or fentanyl or whatever.
Well, again, like kind of coming back to the known harm. So we're talking about known harms, which is really Kara had talked to me the first time about this. Like we know there's a harm with alcohol. We know there's a harm with heroin. We know there's a harm with other medications even. So there needs to be some sort of a way of tracking it. The problem with cannabis, and I say this over and over and over again, is we don't have any data and we don't have any known harm. So it's unclear why they're testing and testing for the reasons of reporting mothers rather than collecting to figure out and follow the data to figure out if there is a harm. Because if there isn't a harm, then we're right. And if there is a harm, then we can help prevent it in a way because we will know where that comes up. But if you can't collect the data, you can't figure out what the issue is. So
And please come study my 7-year-old who's reading at a third grade level. He wants to do division and multiplication. He's literally reading Lemony Snicket right now for fun. Like,
and again, like we talk a lot about the moms. But if you weren't feeling well, if you're having seizures, if you had been doing all sorts of other things that your body was not able to do because you had taken the cannabis out of your system, you could not have parented that child the way that he needed to be parented. And we've been a whole different conversation right now. So, okay, let's fast forward.
So, yeah. So, and I've sent every mom I know to Brigham and Women since.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry. I'm having a little bit of
Okay.
Okay. So I had two miscarriages last year. Oh. And honestly, my seizure disorder has scaled back significantly. I think that, not to get into any details, but your environment has a lot to do with how your body reacts to things.
And of course.
I'm living in a much healthier environment at this point in my life, and my seizure disorder is not nearly as bad as it used to be.
Oh, good.
That being said, that does not negate the extreme anxiety that I deal with on a daily basis. It's well diagnosed. Solid history of anxiety and depression, and the sciatica, which is all, I don't know if you guys knew, sciatica is a nerve that runs through your back, out your butt, and then down your leg, and it's to get stuck in weird places. And I've had that was initially diagnosed at 15. That's a lifelong thing until you get a surgery, which I have not had a surgery yet, so that's been acting up. So there's a lot of reasons that I would like to continue insomnia. Oh, I've had the worst insomnia this
nausea,
pregnancy.
Nausea?
No. For me, not at the beginning. So my first trimester, before I knew I was pregnant, my first 6 weeks, I thought I was like, there's no way I'm pregnant because this has just not been going in my favor. And so I was like, I must have some sort of crazy intestinal disease. I was like, maybe there's something wrong with me. I rushed to the hospital. I had lost 10 pounds
Oh, wow.
In a couple weeks. from nausea, from throwing up and not being able to eat. And then they did a blood test in the ER and they're like, did you know you're pregnant? And I was like,
nope.
That explains this. Explains a lot.
Mind body connection. All right. So it wasn't for that. But again, humans who carry babies have pain and sleep issues, and they don't want to take medications, and women don't.
You can't. They say, oh, take Tylenol. Well, now what's this class action lawsuit against Tylenol causing everybody to have ADHD?
I took Benadryl. I don't know. There's all sorts of weird medications. It never would have occurred to me that cannabis could have been something that I could use to help ease some of my pain or other issues. So, all right. So you're back in this world. You are a human being making a baby inside of you. You also happen to consume cannabis, and now you're dealing with a new hospital.
So yes, now I do not live. I do not live near Boston anymore. I live near Worcester now, and
which is the cannabis capital of Massachusetts. Man,
they're worse. There's so much where I've had a terrible experience. Honestly, okay. I live, I think, about 7 minutes from Milford Regional and about 35 minutes from St. Vincent. Now, my OB wants me to, that I've been seeing through my entire pregnancy, wants me to deliver at St. Vincent. So I'm like, okay, I did it once. I can probably do this again, right? I have called patient advocacy at both hospitals. I have talked to maternity wards at both hospitals. Then I reached out to DCF, DPH directly, because they said, well, this is a policy at DPH.
All right, I don't even actually understand how this all works. So can we kind of go through the levels? Cause so just so people can understand all the levels of complication, because I keep talking about this, like, this is Massachusetts. It's legal everywhere. Women are talking about this, and why can't we fix it in this state alone? Like, we're just having trouble fixing it hospital by hospital. So sort of explain how this policy exists and all the layers that I don't even know. I know you understand it. So explain it in a way that kind of lays it out so people can kind of follow it a little bit. Yeah.
Try to go. Okay. So let's see. Okay. So you meet with your OB. And you have your doctor who's going to monitor you throughout your pregnancy. There's at least 3 ultrasounds that you're going to go through, which, by the way, found this out the hard way. The Affordable Care Act does not say that your midterm pregnancy ultrasound should be covered by insurance. So, surprise, $844 bill. Anyway, off topic. Insurance is part of this, though. We will get to it. Of course it is.
Yeah. Okay.
So you're seeing your doctor, you explain to your doctor I couldn't even not explain to it because I don't know if you have my chart in the digital age, everything's in a database somewhere. So I have a my chart account, which is very common for people to have, which is where all of your medical records, all your test results, all of your visits, all of your messaging to your doctor. If you don't have one, it's a little app on your phone. It's a site on the computer. You can just go in, do everything you need to do with your medical. Everything's stored there. It's actually a super great tool. It does have in there that I am a medical marijuana user, and it cannot be removed.
Ever.
It can never be removed because it's part of my medical history now. So no matter where I go to have this baby, when they get my social and my name and my phone number, they can pop into any doctor, any hospital, any medical facility that has internet can pop into my chart and say, oh, she uses cannabis. So there's no getting away from this at this point for me. There's no getting, it's in there forever.
And again, so we're talking state law, federal law. That's why it's so very confusing. And then, I don't know, hospitals have their own law. But we're talking about the 2 different issues.
Hospitals don't have laws. Hospitals have policies.
That's what I'm talking about. I'm not kidding. Okay, policies.
Policies can be changed, but you have to have good, decent people working at your hospital.
Okay, so we're talking about laws filtering down to policies that are negative, and this is the policy that we're trying to change. Okay. Yeah.
So my medical history is there, and there's nowhere I can go to hide from this fact that I'm a cannabis user. And so, or have ever been a cannabis user. Now, if you have ever been through a rehab facility or you have a history of hard drug use, and it's in your my chart, this law, this policy will apply to you as well. Not just for kids, any record, any history of drug use that's in your chart. That's a digital chart that everybody can access, every medical professional. So I tell my doctor that I use cannabis, that I would like to continue to use cannabis, that I find it very helpful for all of these things. I'm losing weight at record amount. at record speed. I'm like, just pounds are falling off of me, which a year ago, I was not so mad about. Pregnant, not so good. And so I was like, okay. She says, I don't love it.
Okay.
And I don't love it because I don't really know much about it. And okay, I go, fair. Oh, hold on. I am a professional cannabis educator. I got you. So we start going through the stuff. And I'm literally teaching my doctor the endocannabinoid system.
All right. And again, I got to back up people. Anyone listening to this? I know, Kara, but I also know other people across the country who are literally doing the same thing for their medical professionals because they just are not taught it. They don't have time to learn it and they don't know what it is, but they are curious and they want to talk to people who understand it. So here we are in a situation where the patient, again, is helping the medical professionals so they can figure out how to integrate it or if it's really bad or they know stuff you don't know. So again, okay, so you're moving forward with your doctor.
So I'm talking to my doctor and I explain, this is your endocannabinoid system. This is how it works. This is how my nervous system works. This is how the two systems work together. This is why cannabis works for me. I really want to keep using it. I go back a couple of weeks later and she's, okay, you're going to use it. I'm not going to pick a fight with you about it. I mean, I'm a very difficult pregnant woman. I've refused the glucose test. I have refused to do all kinds of monitoring and extra stuff she wants me to do. I'm just like, no, I don't need that. Thank you. And so extra vaccines, I've just been like, no, I'm good. We're good. Thank you. Just the stuff that's supposed to make pregnant people or just people nervous about their health, I'm just not playing into it. So she says, okay, go on, live your life. Do what we got to do. But what are you going to do about giving birth? And I was like, I'm on that next. So step two, I called St. Vincent where she wants me to labor. And I call Milford Regional because if there's an emergency, that's where I'm going to end up. If I have to get dragged off in an ambulance, it's right down the street. So I call them both and I ask to talk to their patient advocates. They're very difficult to get a hold of. I explain to them, I'm a medical marijuana patient. I want to know what your policy is for medical marijuana patients. I'm a longtime user. This is why I'm going to have a baby. I might end up at your facility. I don't want to deal with the 51. Now, the 51A. The 51A is the form that is completed by a medical professional on behalf of their mandatory reporter policy and is submitted to the Department of Children and Families, DCF, as a reporting the parent as a risk factor for child endangerment.
Okay, I got that. Child endangerment.
Child endangerment. That's what it is, 51A. Okay. You can file a 51A for a myriad of reasons. You could file it for somebody having hard drug use in the home. You could file it for an abusive relationship. You could file it for neglect. You could file it for any reason that you think a child is being.
But marijuana, cannabis, is on the list of mandatory reporting substances, whatever. Yes. The policy includes cannabis on this, and you are Brigham and Women's, and you got it off of the policy there, but now you're fighting it at two.
And I changed it at the whole hospital, so it doesn't matter what doctor you go to.
Yeah.
Okay. So I.
It's a lot. It's a lot of agencies and names and.
Yeah,
numbers.
There's a lot happening. This has been a saga of my. This is not helping my extreme difficulties with anxiety.
Okay, so basically, no hospital will say to you, "We will not file a 51A."
It wasn't even just that. It was getting ghosted by department heads. It was being refused contact information to the legal departments. Oh. It was being refused contact information to the next level up management. It was being told, and I quote, the head of maternity over at Milford Regional says to me, well, you can do whatever you want with your body, but once it starts affecting a baby, then it becomes our business. Yes. And in that tone, followed by, don't tell me how to do my job. And I was like, but this is the law. I said, this isn't the law, ma'am. This is a policy and it's not the law. I've checked on it. I'm 100% sure that this is a policy that you are entirely in control of.
Right.
And she's like, don't tell me how to do my job.
So were you able to access the legal department? I don't even know who owns those hospitals.
I was not at any point able to access
wow.
legal documents. They would not allow me the contact information. The woman at Milford hung up on me. That's when I just gave up on them. I was like, you're not even willing. So then I was like, okay, I go back to my doctor. I go back and I was like, what is going on? This is wild. We can't be doing this to people. And she goes, listen, this is after I have a conversation with her where I say, I'm going into labor naturally. We're not doing Pitocin, which is induction of labor. We're not popping the water. We're not breaking my water. We're not doing an epidural. We're not doing a C-section. Like, I'm going to giraffe babies fall 6 feet in front to the ground when they're born. That is your welcome to Earth moment. I'm doing this like a giraffe. This is my plan.
I had the exact opposite reaction. I was like, went into labor so early in the morning, didn't even know it was happening. I get there at 5. I'm like 8 centimeters dilated. I'm like, and writhing in pain. She's like, do you have a plan? I'm like, no. I'm like, do you want pain meds? I'm like, of course I do. Do I look like someone who doesn't need pain meds? And they couldn't give me an epidural. They had to give me like, I don't even know what I was thinking. This is this crazy thing about canna momming. They are perfectly fine giving you an, I'll needle like the size of my head and sticking it between two vertebrae in my back while I'm writhing in pain, but they won't let me take an edible to help calm me down. Does that make any sense? No, it does not.
It's fentanyl. Your epidural is more often than not full of fentanyl.
Anyways, it does make you feel calm, but it probably is a better way to... Anyways, okay, so you're saying
well,
I don't want
this.
I
say all this to my doctor. I say, we're doing the minimum amount of medical intervention. I'm just seeing you on the regular basis I'm supposed to see you just to make sure that everybody's growing correctly, that we're all healthy and safe. And if I am concerned about my sugar intake, I know the signs of diabetes. My dad has diabetes. I watch. If you start falling asleep after you have a piece of bread, you probably need to go get that checked out. I'm watching myself. I eat super healthy anyway. I'm on a FODMAP diet most of the time, so it's all salads and lean meats for me. I'm not worried about any of it. God love the medical industry. She comes back to me and says, well, if you will schedule your birth, take the Pitocin, let me pop your water, and we can just do this birth on my schedule, then I won't report you. I won't file the DCF because I have control over that. That being said, once the baby is delivered, you're required to send the baby to not the NICU, but
the nursery
where the nursery doctor will then look at my chart where it says I'm a cannabis user and they don't know me. And they may choose
to
follow
screen.
Hospital policy and file a 51A. So I said, okay, so we're going to do everything I don't want to do in my birth plan, just so that you can not so that I can have no security against being in favor of being protected against this discriminatory policy. So what? This is not helpful.
So you're stuck where a lot of women are who probably don't have resources and didn't even have the sense that there is an ability to fight this. So you're in a position where you're giving birth in a hospital. Everyone knows what's going on with you. You're using this in a medical way in a state where it's legal, where lots of people are making money on it and doing compliance stuff. But that's another conversation we can probably have a little later. And you're feeling stuck. And this is just one hospital in one state. And this is happening to women, or two hospitals technically. And this is happening to women across the country in every hospital. And I know that in the state of Arizona, I don't know if you've been following this, there was a woman who actually fought back after family services was connected because of the tox screen. And now they aren't allowed to do the tox screen if you're using cannabis with your medical professional. So how does that happen in Massachusetts? What's going on? Why is this not getting fixed?
Well, okay. So then the activist inside me, I was like, okay, I'll just fix this. It's kind of fix it. It can't be that hard. So I called DPH, Department of Public Health. Department of Public Health mandates a lot of these. They handle most of these mandatory reporter policies and determine when and how they should be issued to DCF. So those two organizations, they work closely. Mm-hmm. So DPH, I call them, I'm on the phone. I'm like, explain this to me. They're like, It's the hospital. It's entirely individual doctors. It's the individual doctor. They have the right to do it or not do it. If they think you're in danger, or if they don't think you're in danger. If you're, that's totally up to them. And I said, so any hospital, any doctor can make this decision independently of the hospital, of the medical facility. They're like, yeah, we have, it's just a suggestion. It's literally just a suggestion from DPH.
That you test for cannabis or that you report? Yeah,
That you test and that you report.
So they could, so DPS could say, take the suggestion out and they would not
DPH,
do it?
Well, no, they won't do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, why don't you just take it out? And they're like, I was like, that's going to be like lawyers and lawsuits and class actions. And there's going to be a lot that goes into that.
Okay.
A lot went into it in Arizona that I'm just not in a position to.
Okay, so we have the Department of Public Health says we think that you should probably check for cannabis because there might be some kind of danger, and if you test and it's there, you have to report it because but the doctors believe if they are finding something that has a danger, they have to report it. So in their head, it's a danger, so they have to report it
because they don't know any better. They're not even taught the ECS. How are they going to know any better? Their medical degree has failed them already.
All right, so DPH can't help you because, okay, what's the next level up?
DCF. So I go to DCF. I go, oh my gosh, what is going on with this, you guys?
Children and Family Services.
So I have this whole long conversation with DCF about there's no equivalent to FAS. That why are you even accepting these? Why are you doing these investigations if it's just cannabis? And there's no equivalent.
What the harm is, how can you be testing for harm if you don't know what the harm is? It's sort of a
how can you claim harm, child endangerment, if you don't know what it is? And they said, we'll get back to you. And I wait. Plan Z.
Okay.
1.5, right? Home birth.
So can I ask you one more policy? So what if the state said, okay, we're going to make it a law. You are not allowed to test any hospital that functions in Massachusetts is not allowed to test, do a tox screen on a
then that would be policy overriding medical health and decisions. And I don't personally know if that's right either.
Yeah.
I think that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if how to fix this.
It's a health professional's mindset. Like the health professionals believe it's dangerous, but the problem, like I kind of said this earlier. So the problem is if you don't have data, how are you going to know whether or not it's dangerous? It's a little confusing for people, but if you aren't allowed to collect data because women are not feeling comfortable telling people that they're using cannabis during their childbirth and those children aren't followed, then you don't really know. Mm-hmm. And I will say, this is the thing that kind of opened my eyes to this as I spoke to an emergency room doctor in California who said she shifted her idea of what cannabis is because when the ER people, for some reason, they were doing tox screens on everybody, regardless, whatever. And somehow she could see that the people using cannabis without the other substances were better. And it kind of like, because she saw the data in front of her eyes, you know what I mean? So again, you're not going to do tests on pregnant women. We're not going to do testing on women, but women are using cannabis when they're pregnant for a lot of reasons, the throwing up thing.
Yep, hypermesis.
I should learn how to say that. That one I talked to women about, just the idea that you can't sleep. I was told to take Benadryl. Like, really? You think Benadryl?
We're told explicitly you are not allowed to take Benadryl during your pregnancy at all anymore.
My mother smoked. Benadryl's there's been a bit of big, she went from smoking cigarettes to...
I know, right? I said in 8 years between, 7 years since when I had my son, my first son to this son, things have changed. Things I'm supposed to do or not supposed to do. I mean, depending on what country you go to. I was pregnant in Greece during my first labor, and a guy wouldn't serve me. A cafe owner refused to serve me coffee. You denying a pregnant woman caffeine? I swear to God, I lost my mind on that one. But there are also people telling you can't dye your hair. Well, in the 80s, you couldn't dye your hair when you were pregnant because they were very harsh chemicals. Now, who cares if you dye your hair? It's not the same chemicals and compounds. Things change. We've evolved. We go, you really shouldn't eat deli meat because there might be a bacteria in it. Well, there might be a bacteria in anything. You're telling me that all the Japanese women in the world, none of them eat sushi for the 9 months they're pregnant? Please, please.
So, all right. So culturally, pregnancy across the country, that's a whole nother show. All right. So we've talked about how difficult it is. We don't know what the solution is. What's out there. I know I wanted to tell your story because I talk about sort of like anecdotally about what's going on with women. So, I mean, do you have anything like, I don't know, actions? I know you're frustrated, but.
I'm so frustrated. Well, okay. So my last plan of action to have this baby where I wasn't going to be discriminated against or have some policy enacted upon me that was inappropriate was to have a home birth. So I was like, okay, let me start looking at this. So how can I have this baby in my living room? Which my husband is very much, a baby in the living room? I'm like, yeah, what, have a baby in the living room? What's the big deal? I'm a giraffe. So I go on my insurance company website and go, okay, midwives, let me find one. I find there's a couple in this area. I call them. They go, oh, well, we don't take insurance. I was like, well, how come you're listed on my insurance thing? Well, I guess my insurance company covers Rhode Island too. So if I was living in Rhode Island, I would have access to midwives.
Oh, really?
But now as a Massachusetts resident, Massachusetts residents, insurance in the state of Massachusetts, as a policy, again, policies destroying our world. The policy for Massachusetts insurance is to not cover midwives and home births. So if people who have had a midwife come to their house and have done a home birth, they have paid for that out of pocket, which can be up to $10,000.
So I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, so I do know several. And I hadn't actually thought about, you really want to do that home birth if you're going to do it that way.
You have to pay out of pocket for that whole thing, for your nitrous oxide, for the tub, for your monitoring, for everything. That's all out of pocket.
I know. I was a drug, give me drugs, stay in the hospital for a few days. I feel relaxed kind of girl. So I did. But now I'm in cannabis. Maybe if I had smoked cannabis back then, it would have been different. All right. So probably. All right. We have a couple more minutes. You're more than just a pregnant woman. I know that's hard to believe. You know a lot about this.
I'm a walking uterus, according to the United States of America's policies. So
that is true. So cannabis, it's a compliance industry. It's all about compliance. It's literally all it is compliance. You know all about compliance. You're in this deep in compliance. You've been doing this for a long time. You're frustrated with the compliance. So I don't know. You just wrote something. Do you want to just sort of spill whatever you want to talk about for 5 minutes about compliance in Massachusetts? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I just, the Institute of Cannabis Science just launched a new blog article series for their website. And I was the initial writer for this launching of this series, which came out today.
Okay.
Today. We're recording on the 13th. so that came out today, and it's been a couple hours, but it's been receiving some pretty good feedback. I talk a lot about, honestly, the naivete that comes from being an activist. I believed that cannabis was different, that cannabis as an industry would be better. We would be more wholesome. We would be people first. We would be human centric. We would be holistic in all of these wonderful, beautiful, altruistic ways. And yeah, everybody was going to be focused on keeping people out of jail. Everybody was going to be focused on protecting moms. Everyone was going to be focused on getting patients healthy again and getting them quality care and good medicine at affordable or even free, because it's a freaking plant. This is not that complicated. It's hard to grow really well, especially when you are trying to make the outdoors indoor. I get this. I know these things. But I believed that it would be different. And I have a bit, enough resentment and guilt about working so diligently for so many years. I've been in this space for 15 years, getting people jobs, training people, vocational training, helping people get these businesses open, working through compliance issues, working with the CCC, working on all of these issues.
I didn't even talk about the Northeast Regional Cannabis Symposium. I was going to ask about that, but we'll get back.
For the workforce.
That's where she focuses. That was a symposium she held last year, October.
August, end of August. Okay. And now I see our chads. All I see are cash grabs. I see people's business plans written You haven't even opened a business and you've got an exit strategy. It's not tech. It's not tech.
I've seen that thing. Like, why are you entering if you have an exit plan? And again, I only talk to women in the industry, usually caregivers, and it's a different vibe. Most of them are here because they're evangelized or pissed off that they didn't have it before. There's several reasons, but they're staying in it for a certain perspective. So when I meet men, I'm always like, wow, there are men here too. But I have seen this.
There's actually more men than women.
Way more men. But again, I've been seeing this on, like the biz world of cannabis. And it's all about, it's a buyout. People are buying people out and they're treating it like tech and they're treating it like a thing that's different. And again, she's a plant. She's a plant. She's a woman. She's a female plant. She's a caregiver plant. Women exist until the Supreme Court says we don't. And I really do. And Kara is one of those people but she's a pioneer and it's frustrating and it can be heartbreaking. That this industry could look differently and it could be built differently.
It could be. It could have been. It could have been if people listened to the activists and not the money. But the money came in, and when the money came in, more often than not, money is held by men, whether we like it or not. More money is in every other industry in every aspect of the world. More money is held by men. It's, oh, look, a female billionaire. You know, that's always exciting when you see a female millionaire, self-made or whatever. You know, when you see a man, it's like another man making money. Like, more money is held by men than women. So right, when the cannabis industry grows and has more money coming into it, more men came in. And you see that CEOs, that high net was 36, I think when I got involved, 36% of CEOs in cannabis were women, which was above and beyond any other industry in the world. And little by little by little over the years, it's come down. Every freaking year it has come down. And when it's come down, you know what has gone up? OSHA complaints have gone up. Bad workplace policies have gone up. Discrimination has gone up. Harassment has gone up. I mean, this, not to like poop on men, I don't know if they're connected, but this is what's happened.
But businesses are run a certain way because there are certain decisions made by some certain people at a certain time. And those are the rules, and the rules are made up. So, and I don't know how to change the world. I do a podcast from my daughter's bedroom, but I do feel like there are enough women who I know personally, literally personally, who are in this industry, who have money and resources and knowledge, the knowledge that you own and the Northeast people own. The lawyers we know doing it a different way. It's always about the money coming in because that's what's, we decided to treat this before we let it really kind of grow and have doctors accepted and nurses accepted in the medical world. We decided we were going to make money off of it. And now here we are, but we still are here and it's still a new industry. I still have hope and you're still here. So we're not going to end on a bad note because we're actually over time. So what do you think? The vision for Massachusetts, if it's something great, I don't know, what's the next thing? You've been involved at lots of different levels and different things in Massachusetts.
We need to go back to our roots as a state. We need to have a real conversation about how we're protecting patients, how we're protecting moms, how we're protecting the workforce, and we need to not prioritize Chad's bankroll. I'm sorry. Like, he's just not the priority. That cannot be the priority. I mean, I love making money. Making money is great. Super fun. Great thing. I love paying my mortgage. It's awesome. Great feeling every month. But as an industry, as a plant, as a piece of nature, this cannot be the only priority.
Amen. Although I did go into to make money, and so did you. But we are.
I didn't get into to make money. I was like, oh, maybe I can make money after we legalize it. That would be cool. That's been a lot harder said than done.
I know. It's craziness. All right. But we are changing it and we're adding a new voice and we're existing in this world. And you change one hospital, we're going to happen in Worcester. It's going to happen across the state. I talked about this endlessly. I'm a manifester now because I smoke pot. So, yes. All right. So that is the show, a little bit longer than usual. But thank you. Thank you, Kara, for joining us today. And there we go. For my guest, Kara Crabb Burnham, and of course, for my Canna Bro, David Yaz, and my Canna Mom Show team, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to the Canna Mom Show, where we are on a mission to enhance the impact women have on the emerging cannabis business industry by sharing and preserving their stories of love, kindness, wisdom, and hope. Thank you for listening and sharing the inspiring stories so that together we'll crush the stigma around cannabis and caregivers. I'm your host, Joyce Gerber. This is the Cannamom Show, and we're a production of Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, it's Justin Benton, host of the Miracle Plant Podcast, where we discuss this miracle plant that goes by so many names and how it's helping people in so many extraordinary ways. So if you love this plant and you want to hear a story that tugs on those heartstrings and learn more about this plant, then head on over to the Miracle Plant Podcast. You'll be glad you did.